Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I am Chet Haas from the Developer Relations team.
I'm Florina Montanescu, also from the Developer Relations
team.
What
a coincidence. And today we have...
Hi, I'm Dom Elliott. I'm a PM for the Android App Bundle.
Cool. So I happen to be in London this week, which is where Florina is located normally, and where Dom is located normally, along with a bunch of other people in the Play team, working on things like App Bundle. We thought we'd use the opportunity to talk about this stuff. I don't think we've talked about this in depth in the podcast in the many years and episodes, so it's about time. So what's an App Bundle?
The App Bundle is the new official publishing format which app and game developers use to publish their apps and games on Google Play.
As opposed to APK?
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to the traditional way, which was done for about 10 years of Android's history, which is uploading a big monolithic APK to Google Play.
So what's the difference?
The crucial difference is in the past, you upload this giant APK and then Google Play sort of acts like a dumb pipe and just sends it out to users. Now we made a conscious decision to split the publishing format and the serving format. So developers now put everything in this publishing format, the App Bundle, and then Google Play processes it and generates optimized APKs to deliver to devices.
So what exactly is optimized? To give you a bit of context, in Plaid, one of the sample apps we worked on, we ended up enabling app bundles, and we did see a decrease in size. But why? What happened there? What was the magic that Play did for us?
I think they just stripped out all the boring stuff and then kept all the interesting pieces. Yeah. Is that right?
Something like that. The way it works is you could actually do this in the old world yourself with APKs. You could target different device configurations. So you could include different resources and code for different screen densities and chip architectures. And obviously you can target by language as well. And in the past, you would put all of these things in one giant APK and users would get a lot of stuff on their device, which their device doesn't need. So with the App Bundle, we optimize that for you and we send just the native libraries and the screen densities and the set of languages we think that user needs, we send just those to that device. So it's a more efficient package and it's a lot smaller for most apps as well.
And then what's the heuristic? I'm thinking languages. Do you key off of like the locale that's set on the device?
Exactly. Yeah. We use their Android settings. We check if they've had a couple of languages set recently so that we'll send two or three in case they're likely to switch languages.
Okay, so as long as they don't go about learning a new language after they've installed an app, they're good.
That's okay, they can do that. And then Play will just deliver the language resources on the fly, on demand.
Wait, what? Really?
Yeah.
It's going to do an auto update to add a language if the user has started using a new language?
Exactly, yeah. So this is what's really nice about this model, where developers just give us everything. Play can do things dynamically. So the user changes language, say they've just learned French, will then deliver the French language for each of their apps.
Okay, so you said developers could do something like this before. They just have this massive thing, but didn't they also, they had the option to send different ones for different situations, right? And then they would somehow tell the Play Store, okay, we'll only serve this APK for these language settings or something?
Yeah, you could use, in fact, it didn't help with language. That's the one thing it didn't help with.
Oh, interesting.
You could do it's called multi-APK sometimes. Yeah. And essentially, yeah, you upload a whole bunch of APKs for one release and you version code them all and you push that as one release on Google Play. It's really quite clunky and quite painful.
Yeah.
Our largest developers who were using this were having a ton of complexity and like pain managing this long rows and rows and rows of APKs. And the versioning system is not easy to use as well. Play, there are some quirks about how the versioning works. Play will look at the top, it will work from the highest version code down. So you have to put all these APKs in a very special order. Otherwise, some users are not going to get the APK you expect. It's not a great system.
And if I can add, in one of the companies I worked in the past, we did exactly this. So for QA, it was a lot of pain because they had to test like different APKs for different ARM architectures and stuff. And then now they only have one app bundle that they need to test because Play does all the magic afterwards.
It's true, but don't you still want to, in the ideal case, test the results, like test the post Play Store, you know, remunging of the library?
Yeah. So you do, developers still generally want to test. So the testing, like best practice, I guess, changes a little bit. We encourage people to test their, to do kind of regular development testing locally. You can just build an APK if you want and test it on devices locally. Then after you upload an app bundle to Google Play, you can, we have a couple of different options. We have test tracks, obviously. You can upload to a test track and then QA on a device like normal. We also have a new feature we launched pretty recently called internal app sharing, which is just a, it's a page where you can add any uploader in your company, like any engineer can be an uploader. You can just drag and drop an app bundle onto it, copy a link and open that on a device. And then you can be sure that you're testing like ARM64 on an ARM64 device because Play will just deliver exactly what's needed for that device.
And that can be a debug version as well?
Yes, that can be a debug version. You don't have to worry about version codes. You don't have to worry about signing with the production key. All of that, we just make it very easy and it's just for uploading testable, debuggable versions.
So one of the things I remember when App Bundle was first being introduced, the trick with it is you have to give the Play Store keys, right? You have to allow Play Store to go in and actually take the bits out and rearrange them, which, you know, clearly you do for the functionality, but did you get pushback from developers on, you know, giving the ability for Play Store to do this?
So that is a good observation. The app bundle relies on this service we offer called App Signing by Google Play.
Yep.
So developers have to upload their signing key, a copy of their signing key, yep, to Google Play to manage. We actually launched this service back before the app bundle, and we launched it really for security purposes and to help developers who were having trouble managing their keys. Managing your keys and cryptographic security is not like every person's speciality. You know, developers used to make mistakes, and if you ever lose your signing key, for example.
I lose my keys all the time, so yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, if you lose your signing key, you can't update your app anymore. Some big developers did this, unfortunately, and they had to release a second app on the store. So we introduced a service where we said, hey, Google will store your keys in the same secure storage where we put our own keys. And, you know, as Google, we have an incredibly high security bar and arguably a lot higher than probably most of our developers can do themselves. So we launched the service, and yes, some developers do express concern. Some developers, you know, we talk to their security teams and we make sure that we're meeting their security standards, and generally those conversations go well. And so that is crucial then for the app bundle. So the app bundle built on top of that. And as you noticed, yeah, when we generate these optimized APKs, we have to sign them as well. We sign them for distribution so that we can send them out.
So I assume the flow in something like this, you introduce this notion where now developers have the ability to send their keys up to the Play Store, and most developers say, thank you, I'm not interested in that. And then you introduce app bundles, and then people say, oh, well, if there's actually an advantage, you know, besides the, you know, I can't lose my key thing, I assume that that brought a lot more people into the room.
Yes, definitely. Now there are some pretty obvious and significant benefits. Android app bundle is one of them. There is that, you know, not losing your key is another, obviously. We've just added a new service called Key Upgrade for new installs. So if you're enrolled in App Signing, you can actually upgrade your key to a new, strong, cryptographically stronger key. And Play will use that to sign just the apps going to new installs. And we'll keep using the old key to sign the updates going to existing installs. So that's actually, you can't do that outside of Google Play. That's a huge kind of potential security benefit. And then on top of the app bundle, we're starting to add other benefits and features and useful services for developers. So all of these are pretty strong reasons.
So am I allowed to ask what kind of traction you've gotten? Because I assume that it was going to be a hard sell just because, you know, you get anywhere near security, that's, you know, developers' livelihoods, and they're not going to want to do it, right?
Yeah. So it's going really well. I think we launched the app bundle about 18 months ago, I think, and now over 270,000 apps and games are using it in production, including 30% of top apps and games, and representing about 25% of active installs.
Okay.
So yeah, they're going in the right direction, definitely.
I'm glad you gave me percentages, because when you say 270,000, if you had said 450 billion, I still wouldn't know how that compares to, you know, the number of things actually coming in, coming out, being served.
Yeah.
So. Do we know how much do apps save in size in general, like an average?
So on average, apps save about 20% compared to a universal APK. If you were, so that's a universal APK, which contains all of the assets and resources. So if you were doing multi-APK, for example, in the past, maybe you would save a bit less than that. But.
And do you know where most of the benefits come from? Is it the language? Is it strings that are not being served down to all these devices?
It changes a lot by different app, actually. Some apps have a lot of native libraries, and like it's a dramatic saving there. Some games, for example, who have a lot of strings, like that can be, the languages can be the saving.
Yeah. I wonder, this is getting maybe a little far afield, but I've heard of these instances where, like, during the development process, some assets get added, like images that no longer have anything to do with the app. And then there's this, you know, 2 megabyte thing just sitting there. And it's hard for people to know that it's there, given the amount of resources, the amount of assets that apps use. You kind of have to find it by inspection sometime later. But I'm thinking, if Play Store has the ability now to go in and actually, you know, pick apart the pieces to create these new things, could you actually do analysis on the bits as well and understand which assets are and are not being used? Like, is that something the service could do?
I think that sounds like a really good idea.
Feature request.
Yeah, exactly. We're starting to go in that direction. That's like one of the benefits of the Android App Bundle now is, you know, it contains, for example, the deobfuscation file by default. We can scan more thoroughly and make recommendations. We hope to make more kind of recommendations to developers. So for example, we launched a size report, and we have an analysis there, which shows you the largest files and assets in your app bundle, and it orders them by size. So we've started to like surface. So if you've got, you know, we spoke to some developers who had apps, and one developer had a 20 megabyte onboarding video in as like an MP4 in their app. So this was able to, you know, spot that. And then, you know, we can make a recommendation and say, hey, maybe that's not the best way to store this in your app. So we're starting with more analysis and recommendations.
Okay. All right. So you said that app bundles enable other things that are, you know, launched right now, not just future things. So can you talk about some of those?
Yes. So the app bundle really, this idea of breaking up the big monolithic APK, the app bundle really is just the start of enabling that. So what you can do with the app bundle is you can add modules to the app bundle of your app. You can modularize your app. You can either re-architect your existing app, or you can add new features as modules. And the benefits of that for an app developer are, it then gives you, firstly, you can further reduce the size of your app. You can break it up into pieces. Secondly, modularization is generally pretty good for engineering velocity. Teams can work and debug and test and build features independently. And then thirdly, you can actually deliver those modules on demand, on the fly, in ways that you can control through the Play Store. That's kind of an example on the app side. And then we're doing something similar on the game side too.
Okay. So some of this was reminding me of where we were taking people with instant apps, and now I get a little bit confused in what was instant apps, what is instant apps, and how does that compare with all the rest of this stuff?
That's a fair question. Yeah, people do get confused sometimes. The app bundle as a format supports instant apps, so you can enable your kind of base app bundle or any module you want to be instant enabled. And so I tend to think of instant as, if you're thinking about the user sort of funnel, instant is high up the funnel when people are considering your app, really. So they can have an instant experience through a try now button on the Play Store, or when they're clicking on an ad, or when they're clicking on a web link, and they can kind of get a taste for some of the features in your app. Maybe there's a very specific feature. And then further down the funnel, most developers hope that users go on to install their app. And then that's when the full app is installed. And then these modules that I was talking about and the rest of the app experience is then once the app is installed and for the rest of the lifetime of the app, if that makes sense.
Okay. And do these modules then automatically come down, or they come down as needed?
So you have control over that as a developer. You can, if you just want to modularize your app because it's good, you know, engineering and coding best practice for your team, you can deliver all the modules at install time if you want, and that's fine. But if you want to, you can save modules and, well, you have two options today. You can deliver them conditionally at install time. So you could deliver just some modules to users in a particular country or to devices which have specific features, like devices which support AR or something like that. So there's conditional delivery, and then there's also on-demand delivery. And this, you can just specify your app to load them on demand as needed. So as an example, say you are a rental sharing app. Most 90% of your visitors to your app are just searching for rentals, and that's fine. You could put the hosting, like the, you know, the rental offering functionality into a module so that the 10% of users, when they wanna put their house up for rental, they tap that feature, they switch to hosting, that functionality gets loaded into the app on demand. It means that 90% of users don't need all that module and those megabytes. So only the users who actually need it get it on the fly.
Okay, with the possible downside that now there's going to be the delay between clicking on that button and actually having the capability in the app, right?
Yes, yeah. You have to wait for the Play Store to load it, just like any other kind of web content.
Yeah, but you download it and then you just have it there. So this means that the next time when, you know, you want to put your property for rental, you won't have that waiting time. The feature will be just there. So it's only that first time when you're using that module, right, you'll get that feature.
So is there an API that developers are using to enable this modularity, or are they just creating modules using, you know, the module system that's sort of built into to building apps already, and then the dynamic delivery sort of takes care of all the details?
So you can just do it in Android Studio with, if you do install time modules or you do conditional modules, you don't really need to do kind of too much configuration and you don't need to use the APIs that much. If you want to use on-demand modules, then you need to use the Play Core library and you need to specify how and when they're loaded. It was a little bit tricky, and you know, it's a new feature and it was a fairly advanced feature. So we just at ADS last week, we have introduced a new dynamic feature navigator library to make this a lot easier. So now in Android Studio, you can add on-demand modules, and a lot of that configuration and code and like the API implementation will be taken care of for you. You can go on to customize it, but it's all just there and it's pretty easy to use now.
So when you select this in Android Studio, is it actually like generating code for you that you then could go edit, or is it, you know, buried more in the details of, you know, when it gets built?
Yes, I believe it's generating code for you that you go and edit.
All right.
So I know that if you have a dynamic feature module, it means that your, I don't know, let's say main app doesn't know about anything from that dynamic feature module. So this means that it wouldn't know, okay, which activity should I launch right now? And if I get it correctly, the dynamic feature navigator will enable this, right? So it will be able to say, okay, now start this activity?
I think that's right, yes. It was made by one of Ben Weiss on the DevRel team. So he would be able to share the details.
I should point out too that like this podcast is happening because I had asked the team like, oh, I'm going to be in the London office for the week. You know, who are some teams that I should talk to that are local there? And Ben said, well, we should talk about, you know, this specific feature that's, you know, I've been working with Jose, I believe, right? Was it Wojtek? Mm-hmm. Wojtek and Jose. But I'm not going to be here when they're in the office. So instead, we're talking to you about Play bundles, app bundles overall. All right. But they got to mention in for the stuff they're working on. Great. How about updates? Doesn't this stuff relate to the in-app updates that we showed at I/O as well?
Yes. So as I sort of mentioned, the the app bundle and this whole idea of like breaking up the monolithic app, we want to kind of move to giving developers more control over delivering their apps and their features and also their updates. So updates kind of fits into this world as well. The Play Call library has an in-app updates API, and you can add it to your app. This is really useful if not all of your users are always updating to the latest version of your app. You know, a lot of users in some countries around the world, they never have auto update turned on, and maybe they never connect to Wi-Fi and get updates to the app. So the in-app updates API lets your app just check if there is an update available. And then as a developer, you can choose to either show a big full screen dialogue to the user to ask them to update, or you could do a much more integrated, what we call a flexible update, which kind of looks and feels like part of your app. And we just at ADS last week also added a couple of features which developers were asking for who use this feature. So you can now set a priority, for example, so that you don't have to, every update you push, you don't have to show that full screen dialogue. You could say, hey, this update is not super high priority. You know, this is a minor bug fix. You don't need to interrupt the user with that giant dialogue. So you now have a lot kind of more customization of the API.
Okay. And again, does this require the app bundle format then?
This one actually doesn't.
Oh, okay.
This one works for, it works for APKs and app bundles.
Okay. All right. So it's not, I didn't know if we were getting in the world where, you know, we believe so strongly in app bundles that, you know, everything, every feature that Play Store is going to introduce is going to require this thing, but it doesn't sound like we're quite there.
Yeah, I wouldn't say require. I'd say we're not actively building features for APKs as a format anymore. But this is, you know, the in-app updates API is a useful API, so we didn't want to limit it to just app bundles.
Okay.
But keep in mind that it's actually quite easy to start using app bundles. So yeah. Apart from uploading the key store, I think it's just one setting in the Gradle file, and that's it. So it doesn't mean that you need to go through all the, I don't know, dynamic delivery kind of changes in order to already benefit from what app bundles brings.
So you don't have to modularize your app just to get app bundles.
Yeah.
Okay. So in some of the conversations about this stuff, for some reason, people talk about dynamic apps separate from dynamic games. And in my mind, games are apps. So are there separate features when there's a lot of native code, or like what am I missing here?
So yeah, sometimes at Google Play, we use apps to mean apps. Sometimes we use apps to mean apps and games. So I guess dynamic apps as a broadly descriptive term applies to this. It's sometimes how I kind of describe this whole area of apps and games, breaking up the monolithic APK and like control over features and so on. When it comes to the app bundle and games specifically, so we have support in a number of engines now, like Unity and Cocos Creator, for building an app bundle. They don't have support for building these dynamic feature modules, which are for apps to kind of modularize their apps, because it hasn't really made sense for games to break up their code and break up their core functionality in that way. So instead, we have started a new early access program, which we've launched just recently, where we're exploring dynamic asset delivery for games, because most of the size of games actually comes from their assets.
Yeah.
So instead, in the app world, you know, you have these dynamic feature modules with parts of your app. In the games world, we're introducing the concept of an asset pack. So you can add these asset packs to your app bundle artifact, and then you'll have control over how and when those assets are delivered to users.
So is this like there's no need to download level 7 when you haven't gotten beyond level 1? I mean, is that what it's sort of being used for?
You could do it like that. I think it's more... this is up to the game developer, really. I think it's more the game binaries are not that large. So like the levels are kind of contained in the game's binary, but the assets, all the textures and the sound and the music and all those things are the things which are really taking up space. So those are the things that you can kind of load as and when you want.
I guess that's where I was going with the levels, was not the logic for the levels themselves, but you know, the textures, the caves in level 7 look quite different than the exteriors.
Yes,
in,
exactly.
Know, level 1, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe they find a different way to segregate them. Okay. I think I've followed all this. You have more questions?
Yeah, actually, okay, I'm curious. With dynamic feature modules, is there a way to see, okay, how many users have installed a specific feature module on Play?
So you can use analytics like a typical app, and you can see how many users are using that particular feature. It has been a feature request for us to developers have said, hey, it'd be really useful if we had more kind of granular statistics coming from Play. So that's something we've been looking into.
And then just surface it in the dashboard somewhere.
Yeah, that would be pretty useful.
Okay. I mean, you must know which ones have been served down anyway, right? But not necessarily used. Is that the distinction?
Yes, Play has that data essentially. It's the same as, you know, installs of an app as well. We make that data available to you in the Play console.
Can I also add that we have a few samples that also showcase the Dynamic Feature Module's capabilities, like APIs? Maybe we can link them in the show notes.
Yes, definitely. We'll put some links in there. All right, so what did we not ask? We could also talk about other Play features in general. I don't know if there's any new stuff that you wanted to mention that we haven't covered that's not related to app bundles.
One thing developers often ask with the app bundle is, oh, if I switch to the app bundle, how do I release my app on other stores?
Yeah.
So it's actually pretty straightforward at the moment. When you build an app bundle for uploading that to Play, you can also just build what we call a universal APK to deliver to other stores, okay, which contains all your assets and your code and so on. And if you're someone who's started to add those modules to the app, dynamic modules to your app bundle, you can fuse those so that they're included in the universal APK as well. And then you can still just release that as normal. So each build time, you're just releasing one app bundle for Play and one universal APK for other stores.
Okay, so it's basically the same thing that they always did. It's just that they're generating a different artifact for the Play Store now.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of people would use different, they might have different billing libraries in there or something like that. So they would have had to do separate APKs in the past anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
So I covered dynamic feature modules in my architecture talk this year at I/O. So I could talk about this more if you want from a developer perspective and try to see also how this would work from a feature, like if you have any recommendations on what kind of features can be dynamic feature modules, maybe which ones can be uninstalled afterwards.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Maybe you and I could interview Florina next.
Okay.
About how this stuff works. So were you going to talk about that now, or was that just like promoing a future episode?
No, I was suggesting it. If you want, we can talk about this.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So Florina, we've heard that you talked about some stuff in your I/O talk. What was that all about?
Yeah, so this year at I/O, and I did a talk with Ed Boyar about modularizing your app, your Android app. And actually there, we also covered dynamic feature modules. So I'm curious also to see how Dom or how Play sees this. So what we were recommending there is for developers to look at their app and then decide or modularize their app based on their features. And then in their features to modularize even further based on layers. So for example, they can have a module for their networking layer, another module for their domain layer, and another module for the UI layer. But then all of these to be delivered as part of a dynamic feature module. Is that something that Play would say, yeah, we agree with?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've seen lots of different examples. Some developers breaking up their app into many, many modules at like different layers of the app like that, versus some developers simply just breaking off kind of conceptual features into modules. Like one big developer in India has, I think, 30 dynamic feature modules for every different bit of functionality in the app. So it really depends on what the developer wants to do.
And then I know that you can also uninstall dynamic feature modules. Where would this play? What would be a use case for this?
One interesting use case of that I've seen is for onboarding. Quite often in an app, you might have some screens or some animations or things like that which introduce the user to the app. Typically, they only need that once when they're first using the app, and then they don't need it anymore. So you can actually uninstall that on the fly.
Like that 20 meg video that you were talking about
before. Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So then if the user would log out, let's say they would download that onboarding module again?
if they, you sort of have control over that in the app. If they reinstall the app, then yeah, it would be there by default. If they, any module that you uninstall on the fly, you can install on the fly too. So say you have a setting somewhere which says start, you know, tips for the app again or whatever it is, like something to trigger the onboarding flow, you can just load it on the on demand.
What if the user then forgets one of the languages that they learned? Can the update then just remove that? So can app bundles?
Yeah, it will do a deferred uninstall. So as a developer, you can, when you uninstall stuff, you do a deferred uninstall, which is like a lazy uninstall. So you just mark it for uninstall and Play will get around to uninstalling it at some point. And the nice thing about that is if the user just switches back while it's still there, they don't have to re-download it.
I use lazy uninstall. It means that I never uninstall anything I've ever installed.
Yeah.
It's just all there.
Just rows and rows of apps.
Yep. Yeah. It's the new Chrome tabs, I think.
Yeah.
You never close the tab. It just shrinks.
What I liked about dynamic feature modules is that they don't necessarily need to be delivered on demand. They can also just be bundled as part of your APK. So for example, in Plaid, the sample app that we worked on, we started breaking our app and then moving stuff inside a dynamic feature module, but we just never enabled that on-demand delivery because it wasn't the case for our app. But as a benefit, it actually forced us to create this best practice of separating responsibility. Like, why would a login feature for one specific case should know about the login for some other kind of implementation? So, like, it allows you to separate responsibilities better.
And for Plaid, I think you saw an improvement in build times as well after you did
that. Yeah, that's true. I don't remember the numbers there, but yeah, we did.
Wait, why build times?
Because Gradle can build the modules in parallel instead of building the whole monolithic app all in one go.
Plus, it's modularization. So let's say that for the home activity is part of one module, but then the about is part of another module. If you just change something in the layout for the about, it doesn't need to rebuild everything. It just rebuilds the about module.
Okay, so it's breaking the dependencies.
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
A nice thing we added, which maybe we should add to Plaid for advanced developers going down this route, is you can now do feature-to-feature dependency as well. So you can now sort of go wild with your modules and make more savings.
Well, cool. Anything else? I think I'm at an end.
I think that's it.
All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you very much for having me.